Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here for this edition of Garden Talk. We're going to be talking, zeroing in a bit about organic methods of growing and farming. It's very popular these days for a whole variety of reasons, health reasons, environmental reasons. Have you ever thought about the seed used to grow your organic fruits and vegetables? We are going to talk a little bit about that today. We're going to learn about an event for students interested in developing organic seeds. It's called the Student Seed Organic Symposium. And here to tell us about it, with me in the studio, Erwin Goldman, professor of horticulture at UW-Madison. Erwin, great to have you here.
Thanks so much for having us, Larry.
And with us as well in the studio, Solve Hansen, who is pursuing a master's degree in horticulture, plant breeding, and genetics, and has you were an organic farmer as well before coming back to school, correct?
Yeah, that was my first stop out of my first round of college, yes.
And Jim Nguyen, who is we're trying to make connections with Jim right now. So he's not in the studio with us. He's, in, as a matter of fact, I believe at Wallersheim Winery with a group of students. So we'll try to catch up with him. And if we don't, it's our loss because Jim is quite a character, as you might know if you listen to the show. And what we want to talk about is farming in an organic way and gardening in an organic way, and certainly about this seed symposium. And Solveig, maybe let's talk about that seed symposium first.
Sure.
What's it about? Let's just talk about that. What's it
sure.
all about?
Well, the Student Organic Seed Symposium, which we refer to a lot of times as SOS because it's a lot shorter, it started a few years ago when graduate students who were doing seed breeding in organic systems realized that they wanted a network to get to know one another and what each other were doing, and also to build a network with industry, with seed companies who also serve organic growers. So SOS was born. It's a small symposium, about 50 people, and it's focused on both sharing research and just building a network, building relationships so we can collaborate.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, actually. What kinds of activities are scheduled?
Yeah, we have a nice assortment of talks from various leaders in the organic seed world. From private industry to university, we have field trips to places like Organic Valley and to Vermont Valley Farm close to here. Basically, different businesses that are working with organic seed in different scales. We have got a chef breeder workshop, bringing in some local chefs to cook with some of the varieties that students have bred. Really a nice range of activities.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It's going to be fun. We like to refer to it as seed camp for grown-ups. We get together and, yeah.
And Erwin, and you are a big proponent of this symposium.
This has been one of the most amazing conferences, really probably the best conference that I've ever been to in 30 years of attending scientific meetings. And I think in large part, Larry, it's because the graduate students organize it, and they really are not only involved in every detail of it, but they're the future of this organic production system, and they're the ones who are going to lead this going forward. So the fact that you have this cohort building of the people who are going to be taking this out into the world is what makes the thing exciting.
Well, and there are opportunities for the general public to be involved in this as well.
There are, yes.
There's a well-known radio broadcaster who's
even... That's what I hear. Larry will be joining us on Monday night. We're having a science cafe, which is meant to be an informal, PowerPoint-free conversation about seed breeding in an organic system with members of the public and members of the seed symposium. So,
I'm kind of looking forward to that. That should be a lot of fun. And they give us the details for people.
Right. So we'll gather starting at 6:30 at the Goodman Center in Madison, get some snacks, some refreshments. We'll have a cash bar. Then at 7, we'll start with some conversation. We'll have three plant breeders on, Erwin, as well as two other folks from Johnny's Selected Seeds and High Mowing Organic Seeds. And then we'll open it up for conversation. And basically, there will be people in the room who know basically anything you'd like to know about how we make our vegetables.
Yeah, it's really, really sounded to me like it was going to be a wonderful event and open to anybody. It's on Madison's East Side.
Yes.
And
Monday night.
Monday night.
Yep, and it's free and open to the public.
At the Goodman Community Center, yes. Which is a really, really nice center. And about four blocks from my house, too, which
that's
kind of nice.
You can't get much more local for a host than that.
So anyway, that's going to be a lot of fun. Well, so organic seeds.
Yes.
So how do we, is there...
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Right. So we can talk about how a seed is grown, whether it's grown in a conventional system or an organic system. And we can talk about how it's bred. And part of the advantage of breeding seeds in organic systems is that we breed for the specific needs of those systems, whether it's a more sustained, slower release fertilizer, or maybe it's a more variable water supply, or maybe it's a different disease pressure that we don't have a synthetic chemical to treat. So we can choose different priorities for our breeding and therefore come up with varieties that do well, do better in organic gardens and farms.
And is there money? Can money be made in this?
Yes. That's part of the purpose of SAWS is to bring in a wide variety of seed companies from regional scale to global scale who are breeding and producing organic seeds.
Actually, it was Tom Stearns, who is the president and the founder of High Mowing Organic Seed, that really was the spark that led to this symposium. And he actually saw building a cohort of people who would be the next breeders and the next business people in the organic area as being critical to his business. And now, I don't know, there are dozens of companies around the country who sell organic seed and who I think are going to benefit from this expertise.
Well, I have some organic plants that I have in my straw bales, growing in my straw bales, and they're doing absolutely wonderful, as a matter of fact. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. I haven't even given the number. You may have a question about the symposium, or you may have a question about organic vegetables, or maybe you've got something going on in your garden that you wanted to know about. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page, and our Facebook page title is The Larry Mealer Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. So give us a call, shoot us an email, or go to our Facebook page, and you can post there. When are heirlooms considered organic, or are all heirlooms not?
Right. So an organic seed would refer to both how the plant is bred, but mostly when you buy an organic seed, that means it was raised in an organic environment. Mm-hmm. So it was raised without synthetic fertilizers and things like that.
Yeah.
So, right. So there are heirlooms that can be conventional seed or heirlooms that can be organic seed. Yes.
And you could have an heirloom that was actually an organic seed, but raised in a conventional manner, too.
Yep. Or vice versa. Absolutely.
Somebody asked me about that, and I started trying to parse it all out, and I thought, oh, why don't you listen to the show on Friday?
Right.
Well, and it's, you know, one of the challenges, as every gardener knows, growing the crop itself can be a challenge. Mm-hmm. Growing the seed is an additional challenge. It's a technological challenge. And some of our environments, like Wisconsin, are not ideal environments for growing seed. We have a very wet climate. You'll note that a lot of vegetable seed is produced out in the arid Pacific Northwest, or in the east side of those western states. So, you know, I think the challenges with seed production are vast, and the challenges with organic seed production are a whole science in of itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, here in Wisconsin, I mean, this is a leading state in terms of organic farming, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely.
And we have some pretty successful organic operations here, for sure.
I think we're fourth highest in the country for a number of organic vegetable farms, second for overall organic farms.
Yeah. So we're certainly kind of leading the way in that area. Now, when it comes to how do you secure seeds?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a whole process here because if you're going to have organic seed.
Mm-hmm.
It has to come, I assume, from...
Yes.
Right, from a plant that's raised in organic conditions. Yep.
So that's so finding farmers and mm-hmm. seed businesses that have certified organic acreage or certified organic greenhouses, however they're producing their seed, and being able to source from that is a specialty in and of itself.
Yeah.
And a lot of the students coming for the symposium are interested in exactly that space and contributing to that industry.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Anna in Madison has a question for you.
Hi. So thanks for taking my call. I'm a student, and I'm going to be living in a dorm again. I was just wondering what the best vegetables to grow in a dorm room or inside would be.
Hmm. All right. Well, here we have Solveig, who is a student right now.
I am a student. I have most of my vegetables outside. I'm not an expert in indoor gardening, but things that people have success with are herbs. You can grow some greens inside if you have good light. Really, it's good light and even heat, not too hot, not too cold, not in a draft. Compact things like that. You can grow baby greens and, you know, cut them when they're 3 or 4 inches tall, then they'll come again. That's a good strategy. Mm-hmm. You might invest in a grow light or two. That might really help the plants grow evenly and not get too leggy.
Those are all good tips.
Absolutely. The microgreens, I was going to say exactly
yeah,
what Solveig
said,
is a great thing to do inside. And there's lots of little systems now that you can even buy retail here in Madison, mm-hmm. if you're located here, that will let you do a little hydroponic microgreen production. So you can do that inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And have a little fun with it too, Anna.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Ron in Janesville up next. Hi, Ron.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I put some composted horse manure on my garden, and I must have overdone it. I've been told there's too much nitrogen, and it burned out some of the crops and stunted a lot of the other ones, and I just want to know if there's some way I can correct that.
Well, time is one healer.
That's where I was going to go to just,
Somebody suggested I plant a nitrogen crop that one year that draws a lot of nitrogen, like corn. Would that help?
You could sure try it. Sure, a heavy feeder like corn or maybe lettuce, do you think, Erwin?
Mm-hmm.
You know, have you done a soil sample?
Well, no, but my garden did very well up until this year when I did that. So
uh-huh.
the soil, I think, was pretty good. I had great crops. But...
Oh, yeah, the reason I was asking now is because you might want to get a soil sample now, because then you would have a base point.
Yeah.
And you would know how much nitrogen was actually in the soil. And if mm-hmm. you explain those conditions just in two sentences when you send your sample in, you'll get some information on how to adjust or if you need to adjust.
Yeah.
But some kind of cover crop probably would be fine, too.
Yeah, because it's a little problematic with testing the soil because I have 24 6x8 boxes in my garden.
Oh, yeah, but you wouldn't have to put it in all of them. I'd just try in one or two boxes. But you could, some sort of cover crop that you could just then work in.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that would add some carbon to help use up the... Ron, do you think
it's going to use up the nitrogen.
Yeah.
It's tie the nitrogen up. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Right. Do you think it's done composting, Ron? Is it still getting hot or is it pretty
well
broken
down? It's done. It was powdery.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Then I think cover cropping is a good strategy. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you can put something in this fall.
Sure.
I mean, some
absolutely.
Winter wheat or,
yep,
or
winter
rye.
Mm-hmm.
And then just plow it under, kind of dig it under.
Yeah.
That's going to tie up nitrogen. I can tell you that for free. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in too. The number to call 1-800-642-1234. And here's Michael in Madison. Hi, Michael. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. My question relates to the actual seeds. I'm with a company that produces organic seed corn, and I'm wondering, as far as where we're getting at with regulation or where you guys see it coming as far as a GMO tolerance percentage in really any seed in general.
Right.
Or has there been much talk in that area yet?
You know, I know the current organic regulations don't set a threshold for GMO presence in either seed or food. They're not testing because organic is a process-based certification rather than a product-based.
Right.
But I honestly, I don't have an update on the legal proceedings.
I think many of the seed producers will use a sort of non-transgenic or non-GMO affidavit that they'll have when they sell seed. But
sure.
I think that's kind of where it's at right now.
Right.
Yeah, we do have to have something to that effect to say that the seeds that we are planting do not come from GMOs and they do not have any sort of seed treatments or chemicals on them. But then there becomes the process of that's not completely 100% clean. In some cases, it could be 99 or 95% clean.
Yep.
And there's also the problem of foreign pollen getting in. And I was wondering where we're getting at with that type of a deal.
Well, I know that some breeders are working on corn that will not accept pollen basically from other corn varieties, and that would be that type of corn to be used to block cross pollination from GMO crops. I'm not sure where those varieties are.
Right. So there are now some, Solveig's right, there are some varieties, and this is done with a popcorn gene, and for reasons that we don't really know, popcorn just naturally contained a gene that prevented foreign pollen from landing and pollinating and fertilizing the popcorn. And this is why you could grow popcorn in the middle of a cornfield and still get popcorn. That gene has been introgressed now into maize hybrids, and it's available commercially now. And I think it is through technologies like that that will essentially 100% prevent fertilization with GMO pollen. That could be one way this goes. But I don't think any of that is settled right now. I think it's a fluid situation.
Yeah, it's still up in the air. Stay tuned, Michael.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Again, the number to call. Talking gardening today, we've zeroed in a bit on organic gardening and talking and farming, and talking also about the Great Red Organic Seed Symposium coming to Madison. And I'll be a part of it, actually, next week on Monday night. And we'll talk some more about that as well. Here on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, we'll find out how to get the most out of your late summer garden, and we have some tips on mulching and composting and probably a whole lot more. Right now, we're zeroing in a bit on organic vegetables with our two guests, and also we're taking questions about your garden as well, so give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And I mentioned Jim Nienhuis earlier. We've had some problems with phone issues, so we're not able to have Jim on. And I know whenever he's on, we always do a lot of haikus. And we're not going to, he won't be here to give us the haikus, but we've got one from Carolyn, who called in with a haiku, and we always get lots of haikus. So Carolyn's haiku is, "The fruit holds the seeds, leaves, stems, and roots, veggies true, and all good indeed." Very nice. Very nice.
Jim would be proud.
Jim would be very,
if he were here.
Yeah, Jim would be very proud.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure would be spouting another one right back. And he does it with such drama. Yeah. Oh, my God. Goodness. Who's the South American guy who's who's done some of these, and Jim reads this and is like, oh my goodness, this is almost X-rated the way he's reading them. Oh, anyway, let's go to Cheryl in Wauwatosa. Hi, Cheryl. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I have two raised vegetable beds, 4x8. I do try and do organic gardening, and year after year, it seems that I have trouble with my vine crops. Currently, I have some zucchini growing, some cucumbers, and some patty pan squash. Things came up really, really well. I had my soil tested this year, and so I really started out well. The zucchini came up great, lots of flowers, a couple of zucchini, and then now I'm having what I get every year where the zucchini tend to, like, die off. They don't form the fruit. And I don't know, is that, like, a virus? Is it a fungus? What's going on?
I wonder if it's squash wilt.
Yeah, it'd be squash wilt.
Did you notice any beetles growing on the plants?
I didn't, but I did go online and I saw that. And I'm wondering, this seems to be a problem every single year for me with my zucchini. And I'm wondering, what can I do to prevent that? Trying to keep an organic. What can I do to not have that happen to my poor zucchini every year?
Well, if it's squash wilt, it's bacterial, I believe. And if it's bacterial, it could come. There's several ways you could get it. But, I mean, one of the ways is through those beetles. So I think keeping the beetles off the plants is a way you can do that, and using covers or some other way to keep beetles off. But I think once you get the infection, it's very difficult to do. I don't think there's anything you can do about squash wilt. I don't know a lot about that.
And it hangs in the doesn't it hang on in the soil too?
It probably would over
from
winter.
From 1 year to the next.
Yeah.
Well, that was a question. So should I be rotating then the zucchini to the other raised bed maybe to try and help that problem?
Yeah, I think rotation's always good for, both disease management and nutrient management. It's always a best bet if you're able to, yeah.
And I have one other question, if I might, about patty pan squash.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I have this great plant, lots of flowers,
mm-hmm.
but only a couple of the flowers are developing the squash.
Mm-hmm.
The other flowers are just kind of blooming
mm-hmm.
and then dying off, and then nothing's growing there.
Well, those are probably the male flowers, aren't they?
Sounds like it. Like, a lot of times the squash will set a lot of male flowers first, and you can tell the difference by looking at the base of the flower, and you can see if you see a little tiny miniature squash growing there.
That's a female.
Right. If they have the squash, it's a female. If they don't, it's a male. And a lot of times the males kind of come on early, and then you'll see the females follow. So that could be the situation you're in.
Well, that's a very good thing because I didn't even know that. So,
so hang on.
I know there is male and female squash flowers, so that's wonderful. Okay, I won't give up then. I'll just keep waiting for the females to kind of come through for me.
Can you eat those?
You sure can.
Sure, they're delicious.
I thought they were delicious.
If Jim were here, that would have been
his
first haiku. And, he recommends a little bit of batter and a little kind of a tempura squash mm-hmm. blossom. And he recommends that with the Chardonnay, which is probably what he's doing right now.
Right.
As a matter of fact.
He also recommends making sure there are no bugs in the blossom.
Excellent
because
point.
Because they taste much worse with bugs in them.
Yeah, they do. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Question from Jennifer. Should I get sunlight in my yard from about 8 a.m. to 3 p.m.? Any suggestions on how to get more light?
Well, you'd have to move, I'm afraid.
Or get the saw. I have some friends who actually went in and did some pruning mm-hmm. of their trees
mm-hmm.
and actually opened up some sunlight to get through.
Yeah.
And they got more sunlight and had a little better luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can strategically plant the things in your garden so that the tall things don't block sun from the short things. But other than that, it's...
Yeah, and we're talking outdoors here, so you're not going to be setting up grow lights outside. The only thing I can think to do is to do a little pruning.
Or a little nighttime chainsaw work.
Yeah, a little nighttime chainsaw work. Sean in Madison, hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, thank you for taking my call. I have I wanted some clarification, and then also I had a question about cover crops.
Sure.
When you were speaking with a previous caller about the concerns about GMO corn cross-pollinization, I'm not sure if I misunderstood the answer, but it sounded like the solution offered was to make GMO corn, to insert that gene from popcorn that was being spoken about. I personally have an organic garden. I'm all for organic agriculture. I don't have a big hang-up about GMO personally. I think it's probably the way of the future. But I was just confused by that answer. It seemed like the concern was keeping GMO out, and it seemed like the solution being offered was GMO.
Well, let me clarify. Yeah, so that gene is just a naturally occurring corn gene, and it was introduced from popcorn into field corn and to sweet corn just with regular crossing, conventional crossing. So no GM solution, and because that gene is a naturally occurring maize gene, it just freely, it just freely introgressed, just like you'd back cross any other gene.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, but that's a good question. Thanks a lot. That clarifies things.
Yeah. And then on cover crops, I've been working on building 4 or 5 big raised beds in my backyard. Been working on it all spring, taking a little break in the heat of the summer. And I wanted to get a cover crop in. Haven't had this scale of a garden in Wisconsin yet. I'm originally from Utah. And just wondering, recommended cover crops. I heard that come up in a previous call. I know a little bit about it, but I'm wondering what you'd recommend and what the latest date is that I could get them in by.
And how big is your area?
I'm going to have, all told, with all the beds, it'll be, I'm thinking probably 50 square feet, maybe a little bit more.
All right.
Not huge, but.
Yeah. Winter rye is a great option, or winter wheat. You can put that in pretty late. You have to think a little bit about how you're going to till it out. Like if the beds are raised so much that you can't get a rototiller in, then you just have to think about, if you're going to be able to put that much material in with a spade. But
right, okay,
yeah, that's what I would go with. What do you think?
Clover. Clover's great, but rye is excellent.
I like rye, winter wheat or rye, and and you can, well, winter rye, I mean, geez, you can plant that.
Yeah, I mean, to surely September.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Even early October, depending on how cold a fall we get.
That's really what I was looking for. I'm falling behind on this project all over already, and wondering how quickly I need to get moving. So, all right, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. 800-642-1234. That's your number. And let's turn to Kevin in Cashton. Kevin, hi. Thank you for calling.
No, thank you for taking my call. I guess it's not, I don't know if it's a question or not, but one of the last callers, she was saying that she was having a squash bug issue.
Yeah.
Okay. And you were saying, that could get into the soil. I was told, I've never tried it myself, but I was told that you can take a clear plastic and put it down over your garden area and let the sun beat down on it, and that'll sterilize your soil. And I'm not sure if that's true. I've never tried it before, but I was wondering if you can give me some pointers on that, if you've ever tried it.
Yeah, I have never done that, but certainly heat does kill microbes. You'd be killing the beneficial ones as well as the possibly harmful ones, and I'm not sure how deep the die-off would go or how complete it would be, but that concept certainly, yeah.
I think that process, people call that soil solarization, and with plastics, and usually you want to have you can do it in the early part of the season before you plant, but it's most effective when it's hot out. It'll really do a lot of sterilization, and I think, something like those bacteria, I think it might do damage. It might control them. The problem is for the squash that you're going to have beetles flying in from other places that are carrying the bacterium. So you do have the possibility for new infection. But for things in the soil that are there, it is one way to do some kind of sterilization.
Yeah.
Now, is there anything you have to put back into your soil after you do that?
Nope.
So
So, I mean, that's not going to deplete it of any nutrients or anything like that if you...
No, I mean, the microbes, you know, the microbes do have a role in nutrient release, but by and large, the inorganic nutrients that are there should not be affected at all. And, no, I think you just simply take it off and or plant right into it.
Okay. Well, so thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate the call. I was thinking back to Bob Newman, who was a horticulture and a tobacco guy.
Turf and tobacco.
Yeah. And one of the tobacco, and of course, Wisconsin, southern Wisconsin, was a big tobacco, and still is a big tobacco raising area. And their seed beds, they would come and steam. I think it was steam. Those areas. And then raised the tobacco plants up, and there were never weeds.
And today, organic growers do a kind of hot treatment with flame weeding, which is a typical way to control weeds in organic production. Not that different from the steaming.
Yeah, no, pretty close. Nick in Green Bay, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hey, I've got a couple questions for you. We're a young family. We never gardened before. This is our first year. And boy, did we, like... overly successful. I was on Craigslist, and somebody's giving away like a raised compost table.
Okay.
So I had, and my backyard still looks like rabbits and everything, so I quit put a garden in. So we used that for a garden. It worked great.
Cool.
And yeah, kind of. And I don't like, I'm not a big tomato person, but my son, he loves tomatoes, so we figured we'd get two tomato plants. And we must have got the wrong ones because this thing just, it's huge. We probably got about 40 tomatoes on there. So I was wondering when it's going to stop producing tomatoes because I don't like tomatoes.
Nice problem to have, huh?
Right.
Yeah, and underneath the tomato plant, I really like strawberries. So I planted a strawberry plant, but that didn't really take off. And so I was wondering when it's going to stop producing tomatoes because this thing is about 5 feet tall now.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you have an indeterminate tomato as opposed to a determinate variety.
I don't know the difference, but...
Yeah, well, the indeterminates will just keep putting on vine and fruit, basically until frost.
Holy cow.
So, yeah, you know...
How big are these tomatoes? I mean, are we talking cherry tomatoes, or are we...
Yeah, these are, like, little bitty cherry tomatoes.
Oh, boy.
The funny thing is, my son will go out there and just, like, sit there and I'd like to go underneath some strawberries, but the tomato plant pretty much destroyed the...
Right.
Destroyed the strawberries.
They're like vegetable candy, you know? No, I think this is a great opportunity to make some friends.
I would, and you know, especially if they're small, they're you know, for making juice and that. I've had years where I've made up to 50 quarts of like a V8 type tomato juice. When they're small like that, there's not a lot you can do. And apparently he wants to really get rid of them. I've actually froze them whole.
You can sure do that with cherry tomatoes. Or you can put them all in a sheet pan and roast them and then make kind of a roasted tomato sauce and put that in the freezer. It's really tasty.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea either. And eventually November is going to get here. Last year I ate my last tomato in November, but I had green ones that I brought in, and it took that long for them all to, not the tastiest really, it was still fun to be able to say I had a tomato in November from the garden. There you go, Nick. Thanks a lot for calling. And Matthew in Stevens Point, it's your turn. Hi, Matthew.
How's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I had a couple comments / clarification on something. There was a gentleman that called about 10 minutes ago with regards to excess nitrogen in the soil due to manure application. And from what I've learned when I studied agriculture over the past couple of years was something with a high C-to-N ratio, like sawdust or wood chips, something that those microbes can start chomping on in the soil will help tie up that nitrogen.
Yep.
Just as an example. But I was looking for clarification because I know, Larry, you had said that you could, to take a soil test, you could get to see where the nitrogen is. And this is where I need some clarification because what I had learned last year was that given nitrogen's mobility in the soil, it's highly mobile, it's actually something really difficult to test for. And And so if you were to take it, I mean, we still don't really have an accurate way of getting a reading. And I'm wondering if the panel knows anything about that, because that's something that I've always been interested in was, you know, hey, you know, because NPK, right, they always give you that on your soil mm-hmm. recommendations. But given its mobility and its difficulty in testing, how can we maybe address that?
Yeah. That's a great question.
I mean, nitrate, you're absolutely right. Nitrates are very, very mobile in the soil. And so, you know, it's a quick glance. It's more of a snapshot to get that nitrogen level. It's not like a permanent thing like other nutrients would be. But nevertheless, that snapshot is very valuable at the time. But you're absolutely right. It is a transitory, it's a transient thing. And if you have a lot of water moving through that soil profile, you're going to lose a lot of nitrates to leaching and groundwater. So it's a bit of a challenge.
Yeah. And also in temperature driven as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So it's a, you know, it's something that has to be sort of carefully managed and carefully assessed based on the environmental conditions of that farm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
All right.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
that. Yeah. Thanks, Matthew, for calling. Appreciate it. Hans in Madison, we turn to you next. Hi. Thanks for calling.
So I've been out to the West Madison station before, and I pulled off the road again, and I just walked through the student organic seed symposium plot.
All right.
And had some questions about some things I saw there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Shoot.
So there's quinoa there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Quinoa.
Quinoa.
So I think that's something that grows up in the Andes, not in the plains of Wisconsin. Explain that.
Right. Well, quinoa is becoming more and more popular among consumers here in the United States. And there's interest in breeding varieties of quinoa that will do well in our environments so that we take some of our demand pressure off of South America, because our demand is really driving up prices there. And in some cases, that can be problematic for their own food supply. This particular breeder, who I haven't met yet, but I will soon, is breeding some varieties of quinoa for northern climates. Yeah.
And it's, you know,
and so is this a release? Do we know anything about this yet, or is this brand new and we don't know anything yet?
One thing to say about the symposium is that the students who are attending send seeds in the spring
right.
of all the things they're working on. We've even had students who are from Hawaii who are working on bananas. We've tried to grow these things in the location where the symposium is.
Was not effective.
So it's not always a good fit. But I do think it demonstrates what possibly could happen. I mean, I do think northern adapted quinoa ultimately will be possible. I mean, it can be grown in certain parts of Wisconsin and the upper Midwest, although not very well yet. So, I mean, part of what you're seeing is students sending their seed of what they're working on from some other part of the mm-hmm. country. And part of it's the potential of these crops in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the cucumbers, they look great. I don't see any disease for any bacterial pressure on the cucumbers.
Mm-hmm.
But next to them, there are bean plots.
Yeah.
And the leaves are turning yellow.
Yep.
What's the yield like on those? Do you have an idea? Or?
Well, we've picked those beans a couple times, and they've yielded quite heartily. There's definitely some disease in there. There was a variety of bean in there that we saw getting some disease, and we think that it spread to the others before we could pull it out. And I'm not exactly sure what the disease is, but yeah, those are definitely impacted. Last time I was out there, there are also some dry beans being bred by a couple of different students, and I don't think they have been impacted yet. So there are a lot of interesting varieties out there. We're looking forward to seeing them.
You didn't get Dr. Death out there to look at the disease to see?
We haven't.
From the plant disease diagnostic clinic?
Is that another character on the Larry Mueller show?
he's on every so often we have him on talk about plant diseases. So
we haven't. No, we
oh,
should.
Well, get him out there.
Yeah, we should invite him.
And the problems, I know the problem areas that you were talking about for, you know, there could be environmental issues, but there's mm-hmm. also cost issues. I know from my own work in the Caribbean, mm-hmm. There were nutrition deficiencies, there were diet deficiencies among farm families mm-hmm. in a couple of the countries, and mm-hmm. partly because they were giving all their best produce and their best everything
right.
went to sell, and mm-hmm. and then they ate the rest.
Yeah, it's a dilemma. I know that, you know, some farm families here also
same thing
also face. So, yeah.
Yeah. Talking today about organic vegetable gardening, and we're also talking about the symposium, the Student Organic Seed Symposium that's being held on the University of Wisconsin campus and in the area.
Mm-hmm.
There's a meeting on Monday night that I'll be a part of where you as just a sort of like me, somebody who doesn't really isn't an expert in the field, could come and listen and learn a whole lot about what's going on in that area. And we'll talk some more about that. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and a couple of guests for you today. Solveig Hansen, a graduate research assistant in Dr. Irwin Goldman's lab at the UW-Madison. Irwin with us as well. Solveig is pursuing a master's degree in horticulture. She's interested in plant breeding and plant genetics and was an organic farmer before coming back to school and to the graduate program. And Irwin Goldman, one of the half of the members of the Vicars of Vegetables, the other half, Jim Nian, who is, we have some phone issues, unfortunately, we weren't able to bring him with us today. We'll come back with him at another point for sure. We have Rana in Rice Lake with a question, so let's go to Rana. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. It's exciting to be on your show. I don't really have a question. I just have something to share.
Okay.
The tomato guy with his plethora of tomatoes reminded me of this. You know how zucchini become very plethora and you have to beg people to almost take them.
Right.
The last 3 years, my husband and I have allowed a few to grow really big. Mm-hmm. And then we find a basket and it'll fit in and we dress it up like a baby. Put it at our neighbor's doorstep. And we had to quit because they finally figured out who it was. But they've had a lot of fun with that, I'll tell you. So there's maybe a solution for your zucchini problem.
Oh, man.
It's a new one.
That is a great... I love that, Rana.
Yep, give it a try.
Thank you very much for calling.
I'm envisioning like a cabbage leaf for a bonnet or something like that.
Oh, I love that. Well, you know, I have some pretty good zucchini. There's a recipe that I got. I forget where it was from. It's called Zoo Beefy.
Huh?
And it's zucchini and some ground beef and some cheese and whatnot. And actually, it's a kind of a hot dish, and it freezes very well.
Absolutely.
So there's Zoo Beefy in the freezer.
Yeah. Well, and if we want to talk zucchini recipes, if you get one of the giant baseball bat size ones and you peel it and you take the big seeds out and chop it up in like little pieces and boil it with sugar and lemon juice, that you get a filling that tastes a lot like apple filling. And you can make pies. You can fool people. It's the truth.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So is this a part of your own? It sounds like you've had this experience.
I have made this several times, and it fools people, and it gets rid of lots of zucchini.
Now, you're going to go through it once more, because people are going to say, was that again?
Right.
How did we do that?
Okay, so you're going to get your giant zucchini, peel it. Peel the tough skin off.
Cheyenne, write all this down.
Right.
Okay, she's writing it down. So you the giant zucchini,
right.
You peel it.
Peel it, and then take the big seeds out, because seeds are pretty big at that point.
Yeah.
And then you cut it up into slices, like you would have apple slices in an apple pie.
Okay.
And then boil it in a, get a big kettle out, and cook it down with sugar and lemon juice. I don't have the exact proportions, but you can do it to taste. Add a little cinnamon, and it acts a lot like apple filling.
Hmm. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it just all mush when it's done, or does it?
No, I mean your zucchini will hold its shape if you cut the pieces big enough.
So, you know, you're just boiling it for. You're not boiling it forever.
Oh no! I don't know, 5-10 minutes.
Okay.
Till the pieces get tender.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
What a great use.
Ice cream, yeah. Put a little crumble topping. Perfect.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know we were going to learn about this on the show. You know, it's always a fun thing. I never know what we're going to learn here on Garden Talk. And that's a new one for me. And I'm going to remember that. And I'm going to try to remember that. No, I'll remember that because invariably there'll be big zucchini.
There's always one
future.
You miss. Yeah.
Chuck in Lake Delton, thanks for calling. Hi.
No, thank you. Say, on my squash plants in... Now the pumpkins, when I you know, the vines are dying back. I mean, we're getting squash and pumpkins and stuff, but yep. The vines are dying back. And when I pulled the roots and cut them open, there was grubs inside in the roots. And I just wonder, can a person pre-treat the soil as I till this fall and in the spring? Can I pre-treat that with like 7 to kill some of that those squash grubs?
Are the, what are those? You know what they look like?
Yeah, they're a white grub.
That's not a squash vine borer, isn't that white?
Is it?
Is it white?
That's a squash vine borer. I'm almost positive that's what you're describing. It's the larva form that he's got there.
Okay.
Yeah, and I haven't seen any. I haven't seen any bugs, you know, mm-hmm. but I have seen the brown eggs on the bottom of the leaf. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen any bugs at all. But the inside the vine there's the grubs.
Well, I don't think there's an easy. I think the solution that I hear more than often than not is moving, rotating the crop.
That's right, and you can use a kind of a row cover. That's one of the ways to do it, is to put down a row cover in a new area that you've rotated. Make sure that it's an area that you haven't grown cucurbits before, because those larvae will have overwintered. And they'll emerge again. So make sure it's an area that hasn't had squash or pumpkins, and then try to see if you can keep them clean with something like a row cover. You can use insecticides. I mean, you can do that. I don't know about pre-treating. I know people do use insecticides when they see these, but you'd have to do it fairly early before you have all that boring into the stem, because by then you've already got a lot of damage.
I don't know. I can't remember ever hearing anything about pre-treating, like a fall treatment or anything. I just don't think there's anything.
No, I'm not aware of that.
I have not heard of it, but this is not my area of expertise.
Right. Yeah. Well, if it can be done or is done, somebody's probably going to call in and let us know. Mm-hmm. Chuck, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Mm-hmm. Steve in North Freedom, it's your turn next. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Morning. And thank you. Interesting show. I was just wondering, the past couple years, I've planted a lot of vegetables, but radishes. Mm-hmm. I get nice plants, go up, and there's nothing, just the tops.
So they don't make roots at all?
There are some roots, but there's nothing underneath, just a minimal root to hold the plant up.
No swollen root, you're saying?
Yeah, nothing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what time of year are you growing them?
I put some in usually about as early as I can.
Okay.
And then also, not in the same spot, down a little farther, and planted some a month ago.
Okay.
Are the tops real large?
Like normal. First time some of them, you know, started getting big enough where they go to seed.
Yeah. Radishes, they like to bolt, meaning go to seed, when it gets hot. So that sometimes summer radishes look like that. Mm-hmm. Like you get a lot of top growth. You see the seed head shoot up before you get a lot of root growth. So, you know, planting as early as you can, or then again in the fall, you know, like late August, September is a good time for radishes.
You're thinning, right? I'm just, that kind of goes right without saying, you're thinning, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, because that would be one thing, too crowded. Another one would be too much nitrogen. If there's too much nitrogen, they won't bulb really. I think planting them in a cooler, as Solveig said, a cooler situation. Those are the three biggies. You know, too hot, too crowded, and too much N.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there you go. So,
there is a, if I could mention, UW Extension, which is really a great source, cooperative extension at UW Extension, is a great source of information on all sorts of questions in the garden. And they do have a publication called Growing Carrots, Beets, and Radishes and Other Root Crops in Wisconsin. So if you're interested, check out the learning store at uwex.edu, and you'll find some of those publications.
Yeah, that's a very, very, very good idea. Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Well, go back to the symposium here. Again, for those who may have tuned in a little bit late, this is graduate student run, but what, where can or how do the average, how does the average person get involved?
Yeah. if people want to learn about SOS, they can find our website at soseeds.org. But if they want to join us in person, we are having a science cafe this Monday at the Goodman Center in Madison, Wisconsin. And well, it's an informal chance to interact with plant breeders. We'll have a panel of three breeders, Erwin and two other folks, one from Adrian Shelton from High Mowing Seeds, and John Navazio, who's the head breeder at Johnny's Selected Seeds in Maine. They will be there to answer questions. And we're also trying to make it kind of interactive. So we'll have some seed breeding trivia set out that you can look at before we get going. And we'll have some time to, the panelists will actually ask the audience some questions and have them discuss. So it'll be fun and interactive and no PowerPoint and no quiz at the end. But just a nice nice opportunity to get to know one another and share some information and hopefully get a little more curious.
Well, I'm not going to fail if I don't get all the answers right.
Well, there will be a quiz for you, but everyone else.
All right. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, and I'll be there. And it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about, what time does it start?
We open the doors at 6:30, so come in, get some snacks and drinks, and then 7 o'clock we'll start the program.
Talking today with Sylvia Hansen, graduate research assistant, and Professor Erwin Goldman for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and a couple of guests for you today as we talk organic vegetables and organic farming with Sylvia Hansen, graduate research assistant, at the UW-Madison, pursuing a master's degree in horticulture in the area of plant breeding and genetics. And Solveig, thanks for coming by.
My pleasure completely. Thank you.
She works with Professor Erwin Goldman, who is one half of our Vicars of Vegetables. And Erwin, always great to have you with us as well.
Thanks so much, Larry. It's great to be here.
We have many questions. We have open lines, so we can get you on pretty quickly with your question at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. We had a question from Cheryl, and she's wondering this. Are you talking about developing and growing seeds using commercial seed to develop hybrids? What I hear you saying is that you are talking about the organic process rather than seed saving for the next crop.
Yeah.
And that needs, we should straighten all that out.
Right. That's a great question. So the theme of this year's Organic Seed Symposium is growing the organic seed spectrum. So we are looking at the whole range of activities people can pursue with seeds, from simply seed saving from the garden, from their favorite tomato varieties to use for next year, up to breeding commercial varieties, whether they're open pollinated or hybrid, for use on in gardens, on commercial farms, and commercial farms on all sorts of scales, from a smaller community scale that might do a small CSA or a farmer's market stand, up to quite large organic farms that would supply you know, thousands of people and wholesale accounts. So there's a, and there are different needs for all of those markets.
Sure.
As far as consistency or uniformity of crop, different needs for flavor, for plant attributes, how much TLC you can give an individual plant. And there's a place for a wide variety of companies and breeders to serve all those different needs. So that's what we're exploring, and it's really a wide world out there.
Wide open.
Yeah,
from
absolutely.
The sound of it. And some real opportunities out there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
For people who might be entrepreneurial.
Yeah, and
minded.
For people who are interested about the process of breeding seeds, just how it works, or who may be interested in saving seeds from their garden, or even into getting into seed production or breeding on their farm or garden, We are having an organic seed school this Sunday, which is in 2 days, out at the West Madison Egg Research Station. And it'll be a day-long, hands-on, interactive school with some really excellent organic plant breeders. Dr. John Navazio, who's the head plant breeder at Johnny Selected Seeds out in Maine, will lead part of it. Three different professors from the university will lead some afternoon hands-on sessions. And we'll have lunch. We'll have 8 different seed companies growing organic seed on different scales there to talk about what they do. So if you have questions about seed growing, seed breeding, like, there are going to be people there to answer questions.
The people.
Mm-hmm. really
some of the top people.
These are the leaders some of the leaders in the organic seed industry. It's a privilege to have everybody here.
Shirley in Iowa has a question for you. Hi, Shirley. Thank you for calling.
Oh, you're welcome.
What's on your mind?
I wanted to ask you about peas. When should you put in your fall crop? And is there, I never get a really good crop of peas. And my mother, well, the year she died, had such gorgeous peas, I thought it was a kind of given. But I'm not doing something that she did, and now she's not here to ask.
Yeah, so, and you're probably in, what, northeastern Iowa?
Yeah. Just across from southern Wisconsin, south of Dubuque.
Okay.
Sure.
West.
Boy, Shirley, I am right with you in that I have also always failed to grow a good fall pea crop. I've tried many times, but I think in the right fall where it's nice and cool, we don't get a lot of heat, I think they do well, but I'm not a good one to ask, unfortunately.
Is your spinach usually good? Is your spinach okay?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I would say spinach is a much better bet. Mm-hmm. It's often too warm. August is warm. September is even warm. And so peas just don't – it's just a very much greater challenge than what we have in April and May when you'd normally plant them. So I think that's a much harder thing to do. I think you'd have a much better luck with – you'd have better luck with beets. You'd have better luck with spinach and some of those crops.
Would you put spinach in now? I mean, because the spinach doesn't like the warm weather very much either.
You know, you could sure try it. And depending on the weather we get in the next few weeks, they might do well. It might just be too hot. But generally, late August is a great time for planting fall greens and radishes and things like that.
I think it might be a little early yet.
Yeah.
A little early yet. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Weeks.
Well...
Hang in there.
I have a great pea crop in the spring. Do you have any suggestions about spring? Is your spring pea crop usually really abundant?
Yeah. The planting into that nice, cool soil, the peas love it, and they're the first things out of the ground. Yeah
April. Yeah. Early, you can go in early April sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you should be able to where you live. Early April should not be an issue. That's where that's when I do it. I love, those peas are so good right out of the garden. Oh, man. Making me hungry just thinking about it, Shirley. Thanks a lot for calling. And Tom and Uglaris, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about asparagus. I have a bed that's about 200 foot long by about 20 foot wide, and I'm an organic farmer, and it's really weedy, and I'd like to cut the whole thing down before the weeds go to seed, so I don't want to have more next year.
Mm-hmm.
Is it too early to cut the asparagus?
No, I don't think so.
I think you can cut it.
Okay, because, you know, if you cut it much earlier, then it resprouts again.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think you're fine in doing that in August.
Okay, I was kind of thinking. I mean, the asparagus has gone to seed.
Yeah,
I do not have asparagus experience. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't think you're in any danger of cutting it now within the next month or so. I don't think that will be a problem.
Yeah, I'd like to do it this week. But
yeah.
Should be
okay,
all right.
Okay, well, I'll give it a go, and if I have a problem, I'll call you guys.
That would be great. Let us know.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling in. Now, you can join in, too, by the way. We open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Rob in Madison up next. Hi, Rob.
Yeah, hi. I have a question about seed coating. I'm a hobbyist gardener, and recently I heard that some non-organic seeds are coated with systemic pesticides. Mm-hmm. When the plant sprouts and germinates, that pesticide goes all through the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to know how big of a problem is that, and if the concentration of that pesticide is significant enough for me to no longer call myself an organic gardener.
Well, are you using treated non-organic seeds?
I just go to kind of the local stores like Jung's, and I purchase seeds from them. And but I'm concerned about that a lot of these seed coatings are commercial seed coatings or third-party seed coatings.
Right. Well, first of all, if you're using treated seed, you'll know it because the treatments are always brightly colored. You know, they're bright pink or bright blue or bright green. So,
yeah, like on corn. Corn is usually when you plant that,
sure.
It's purple corn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Generally, as far as I know, corn is not treated with a systemic fungicide or pesticide. Usually that's like cucurbits that would be treated with a neonicotinoid that would deter insects. I'm not sure about corn.
But, you know, if you're buying seed at a local store that has these seed coatings on them, indeed, you are technically not
right.
Growing organically. And of course, there is an exemption in the organic standards that if you did have organically certified land, you are allowed to use non-organic seeds if you cannot find organic seeds available in the market. And this is an important part of the Organic Seed Symposium and why so many students are interested in this area is because there's a mandate if you're growing organically to use organic seed. So if you want to truly grow organic, you should look and see, and there are a number of seed suppliers around the country who do supply organic seed of a number of different varieties. But if those aren't available, then one can use non-organic seed. However, If that non-organic seed can be non-treated seed, that would be much better.
Mm-hmm. And in the case of corn, it just means you have to wait till your soil is a little bit warmer to plant.
All right. Thanks very much for calling, Rob. Appreciate your call. And Dan in Appleton up next. Dan, hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I've got two different varieties of tomatoes. One is the heirloom, and the other one is the beefsteak. And the beefsteak tomatoes have a black fungus or a black imperfection on the bottom of the tomato. Can you tell me what that is?
What does it look like? Is it a rotten little spot, or is it?
It sort of looks like it might be rotten, and it's jet black. And it's on the bottom, only on the bottom of the tomato.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sounds like blossom and rot. Yeah. So that's an issue with calcium mobility in the soil, as far as I know.
The watering issue.
Yeah, so basically, if you water more regularly, the plant should be able to get the calcium where they need it.
Okay.
And oftentimes, or at least sometimes, it's an issue in the first few fruit of the season. And then if you get more water to them, the later fruit won't be as affected.
And it's not an
thing. If I water them a little more frequently, they'll be better off.
Yeah.
How about fertilizers?
I don't know that affects.
And fertilizer is not going to have any impact at all on blossom end rot. If they should be getting like an inch a week.
Okay.
Of water.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Or if you have a straw bale garden, like
right? Like,
yeah. Do you ever have blossom end rot in
never.
The straw bale? Because you soak the straw bale, right?
Yeah. The straw bale, the moisture is just more consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you go and if it's a few days, you can still go in there and there's still pretty good moisture.
Mm-hmm.
Although I try to keep it, I try to keep it.
So you just turn a hose on the straw bale and kind of soak that.
Yeah, well, to begin with, at the start of the season.
To start the season, then how do you water throughout the season?
At the end of the season, I've learned this. The end of the season, when I took the bales apart, the roots were only about, I mean, they were straight down the bale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they were no larger than the cup.
Hmm.
Or the width was pretty much no larger than the size of the original cup, mm-hmm. which I took the cup off, of course, mm-hmm. when I put them in. So you can drop that water right down the mm-hmm. right down next to the stem.
Mm-hmm.
And but I also water because I have potatoes stuck in there as well, and
sure, right.
other things. I kind of water the whole plant, but the whole bale. But mm-hmm. you can water right down where the roots are.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
fantastic.
And it works pretty well. And my tomatoes are, as a matter of fact, dinner tonight is going to be BLTs.
It sounds lovely.
Right straight from the garden.
Classic garden
I
dinner.
Noted some bright red, very large, a couple of very large bright red tomatoes. And I thought, okay, here's dinner tonight coming. Oh, boy. And I've had some, well, I'll talk some more about cooking, but first let's take a couple more questions here. Nancy in Whitewater. It says, I have pepper plants that are, they're about a foot tall, but they have no peppers. What can I do? And I wondered if they ever had flowers. I mean, peppers are, especially if they're like the standard sweet peppers, are so finicky.
They are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you get a cold spell after you plant,
mm-hmm.
you're sunk.
Yeah, it's
where
tough
is she
to
located?
Tell.
Where is she located?
Unfortunately, Whitewater.
Whitewater? Yeah. Hard to know.
It's tough to tell.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we had, there can be so many different things wrong. Somebody else wondered where you can get black popcorn to grow.
Boy, I don't know a seed company off the top of my head, but it's definitely out there.
There is a, when I was talking about pepper, I'm going to go back to
where to get it to grow, meaning, or just be able to buy
where,
seed?
Where to buy it.
Where to buy seed?
So that you can grow it, I think is what.
Oh, here. Looks like High Mowing Seeds has a Dakota Black Popcorn. They're actually one of the sponsors for the Organic Seed Symposium this coming week. So they have one.
Yeah, check them out. It's highmowingseeds.com.
Oh, gosh, it's beautiful.
They have an organic Dakota Black popcorn.
Oh, and this one also has an interesting story. This one was bred by the Prairie Road Organic Farm in North Dakota. So it's an example of these stories that our seeds have. This was actually bred on a farm, and then now it's carried by an organic seed company. So the different paths that seeds take to make it from the breeder to the person who's going to raise it.
Very, very cool. And I was thinking, I have another pepper that is it's a sweet pepper. Mm-hmm. That's a very, very dark blue.
Mm. Ooh.
Those are really tasty. They're a small fruit. Mm. They don't get very large.
Mm. Yeah.
But they taste, frankly, like a standard green one.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Except
mm-hmm.
they're really dark purple.
It's a purple. It's a purple.
Are they purple when they're immature, and then do they ripen to like yellow or something?
No, they ripen to purple.
Huh. All right.
I looked at that. I watched and watched and watched. It's the first time I've grown those, but I watched that. And I thought, it's not getting any bigger, and it's been dark purple for a long, long time. I'm going to eat
it. As good as it's going to get.
And I have to. Well, let's see. I have to go to Lori in Wisconsin Dells next before I get to cauliflower. Lori, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes. I read an idea on Facebook and thought I'd try it with my snap peas this year.
Yeah.
So it said to make a tomato cage, so I used my 3-foot-tall fence and cut a 48-inch piece length and just mm-hmm. wired it together in a circle
mm-hmm.
and planted my peas both inside the circle and outside the circle and let them climb.
Nice. Yep.
And since then, I've put up three more layers. They're over 7 feet tall, and they've been producing all summer.
Holy buckets, that's great.
And they're still going.
Oh, good for you.
So that's how I'm doing my peas from now on.
Boy, that sounds lovely.
And just use a tomato cage.
Just made one on a 3-foot fence.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, boy. I bet you can get some nice cucumbers on there, too, climbing up the, the trellis. Yeah.
Well, right now the peas have filled the whole thing. So
wonderful,
and it's perfect. You get air movement in there. You know, it's probably a whole better. It's just a better way on a trellis to produce a pea crop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I haven't had to bend over to pick. In fact, now I have to get on a step stool.
That's better. It's better than bending over, as far as I'm concerned. Lori, thank you so much. Last night I had some cauliflower that I sliced. That was a big, nice homegrown cauliflower plant that I sliced into steaks.
Yeah.
And then I got some, rubbed a little olive oil on them, and then I had a couple of tablespoons of brown sugar and a little seasoned salt.
Yes.
And then I sprinkled that on both sides, and then I grilled, put them on the grill for like 3 minutes aside or whatever.
Sounds delicious.
And then I
stuck a little cooking on Monday night when you come to Modern Science Cafe.
Then I stuck it in a cast iron pot and just covered it with some aluminum foil and put it back in for 20 minutes or so. Gee, it was good.
Boy, that sounds lovely.
Sounds So we're experimenting with Emily and I are experimenting with all kinds of vegetables these days on the grill, and that was a lot of fun. And just once more, here we've got these events, and we tell us again.
Yeah, we've got two coming up. First, on Sunday, we have the Organic Seed School out at West Madison Ag Research Station on Mineral Point Road in Verona. Mm-hmm. That's a day-long, hands-on seed breeding experience for anybody, consumers, farmers, gardeners, anyone who's interested. It's $20. You should bring a lunch if you come. But please feel free to walk in. Starts at 8 a.m. Then on Monday night, we are having a science cafe at the Goodman Center, which will be an informal chance to talk with plant breeders. We'll have some trivia, snacks and drinks, mingling, and some moderated Q&A with Larry. So that's free. Please come and join us.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun, and that's at 6:30 at the Goodman Center. It's on the east side of Madison.
Yes.
Very nice venue for it. And I should just mention in passing, too, that on Tuesday morning, I'm driving down to Milwaukee. We'll be doing my show in Milwaukee, but then I'll be at UW Extension Day at the fair is on Tuesday.
Nice.
And so I'll be there Tuesday afternoon interviewing all kinds of extension types and
fun.
Probably having maybe some sweet corn or maybe, there's all kinds of things.
Maybe
the pork producers have some pretty nice pork sandwiches, too.
Sounds like it's going to be lunchtime. There's a lot of food talk on the list.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and that's on Tuesday. So lots of good things. Thank you both so much for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Larry.
We'll do it again. Thank you. Solveig Hansen is a grad research assistant in Erwin Goldman's lab at the UW-Madison. She's getting her master's degree in horticulture and plant breeding and genetics. And, of course, Erwin Goldman with us as well, professor in the Department of Horticulture. And half of our group, the Vicars of Vegetables. And he'll be back, I'm sure, and we'll get Jim Nienhuis to come back, too, with a couple of haikus. Thank you all for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.